With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going. You're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the Publisher Fight. It's time for the Publisher Fight.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new England power.
Hi, how's it going? And welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood. I'm the editor at Video Week. And this week's guest is Denise Colella. Denise is the SVP of Advanced Advertising Products and Strategy at NBC Universal. She's also one of the first people I saw go over to the TV advertising world from the ad tech side. I'm sure there were others, but Denise is certainly one of the most noteworthy, and she has certainly been instrumental in making NBCU one of the most progressive media companies when it comes to addressable advertising, not only in the US, but I think globally. In this episode, we discuss the disruption to the upfronts, the launch of Peacock, how NBCU have been partnering with Sky. Both companies are Comcast owned, of course, and how AVOD services can compete more effectively with SVOD services. We touch on a few other topics, but I think they're the key themes. Just a word from us. On the Video Ad News site, we have a Who's Hiring page. Appreciate there's quite a lot of people out there looking for work. Also, there might be people hiring. And if you're hiring, we'd like to hear from you. We don't really have a huge amount of resource to keep that page updated as much well as we'd like, and we're largely dependent on people letting us know they're hiring. So please get in touch via the Video Ad News site, and Sophie will add your name to the list. Okay, now I will cross over to the podcast. Denise had a tropical storm hitting her house as we spoke, so if you hear any background noise, that can be explained by the gale force winds. So, Denise, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here.
So how have you been coping with lockdown on a personal level? And, you know, as we were just discussing, you have come into this with some, you know, personal health problems, well, a history of health problems. So how has lockdown been for you, and how have you been generally?
I don't know. I think that's a question for my kids, because they keep asking me when I'm going back to work. But more seriously, I think lockdown has been a roller coaster of emotions for me, my kids, my family. You know, when you think about how life sort of stopped back in March, we suddenly were faced with this new reality. As you mentioned, I had cancer just 2 years ago. So from a health perspective, I had to actually stop going into the office early. NBCU has been fantastic about giving us all the support we need to work from home and telecommute. So that's been really handy. Personally, I found exercise is my friend. It certainly keeps me busy when we can't really go out of the house. We can't do all the things we would normally do, especially during the summer with the kids. You know, we were able to work out. I'm a big fan of the Peloton. I do try to go out for a run when I can. So I do feel that, you know, this pandemic, while unfortunate, has given me some much needed time to rehab and recover. So personally, I'm grateful for that. I did have COVID early on. For me, it was quite mild. And my son, he was also quite mild. But thankfully, you know, we've recovered quickly. And since then, we've just been figuring out what to do with our extra time, which ends up being a mixture of work, exercise. My family's developed this shuffleboard tournament that we're doing. And then of course, now in the summer, we're back to baseball and swim and softball and, you know, keeping busy.
You're doing considerably better than me on the health front, by the sounds of things. I gave up smoking about 5 weeks ago, and I think I've been pulling on about 1.5 kilos per week. And then I found out today that my sister's wedding was supposed to be in June, and it's been postponed now until I think they're going to go ahead with it in September. So I'm going to be a very fat attendee at the wedding. The upfronts were obviously disrupted, which is a huge part of the TV advertising, of your sales cycle. You know, how has NBC adapted and coped, and, you know, how has it affected your sales?
Sure. I mean, I think the upfront being disrupted has affected the whole industry, whether it's ourselves, our clients, our agencies, or even vendors, right? So what it's done is it's obviously stretched out a little bit longer than it would normally do, but it's also allowed us a great opportunity for innovation and also an opportunity to bring the public in. We had our 30 Rock special just a few weeks ago, and surprisingly, friends that are not in the advertising industry at all would call me up and be like, "Oh my God, did you see this?" And, you know, in a way, I'm excited to talk about what I do. I think since the beginning of my career, I still don't think my parents understand what I do, but you know, I gave the opportunity to bring people who are not in advertising, who are not in TV or even digital. It gave them the opportunity to see and somewhat understand what I do from day to day. So as far as the upfront being delayed, it did give us the chance to innovate, bring others in. And now when you think about what we used to do at Rockefeller Center, right, inviting just a few thousand to come and see our upfront, now we have millions of people seeing it. And I think that's good for everybody.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's interesting. I think there is that, as an event organizer, we have the same dilemma of, you know, I'm not going to pretend that networking will be as good at events, when they're online as they would be in person. But I think there are, that the idea of being able to reach a global audience, you know, when we see our traffic data, we sort of realize, oh, you know, we've got, you know, a lot of people in India, for example, who, you know, we'll probably not come to London for our conference, but we're looking forward to doing online events and being able to sort of connect with those people and to see how, you know, something more interesting could evolve or something slightly different could come out of it.
About that, though, you know, I've been to some really interesting events online. So something that I would have never done, we wouldn't have the opportunity to do, is Nielsen actually was working on their addressable consortium, and they had their partners all join for a virtual cocktail lesson where we had a bartender teach us how to make a few really good cocktails. And it was a really good chance to just talk with others who are participating in the same kind of testing and talk through some of the troubles, but then also learn how to make a few good drinks. So I think the pandemic has given us an opportunity to network in a different way.
Yeah.
Right. And like you said, you had a lot of people from India calling in. I think we've been able to bring a lot of people that are located in different places together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it is very different. I think I was one of the people who thought, you know, that many of the changes that we're seeing weren't going to be permanent. But I mean, I've completely my whole life strategy has been completely transformed over the last few weeks. And you're starting to think about, well, where can I work? You know, should I be in the French Alps, you know, in the winter, or should I be somewhere else? You know, there's a massive shift in mindset about what work is at the moment. And I think lots of different elements of it are going to be things that we hang on to when everything finally, hopefully, returns to normal. So another big launch for you guys has been Peacock, which has seen some huge success with 10 million subscribers. I think many of the listeners of this will have some idea of what Peacock is, but a lot won't, and we often, you know, European listeners anyway, won't have access to it. So could you explain a bit about what it is and then how you're going to monetize it?
Sure. You know, Peacock is our new free streaming service. We're making it available to everybody. We're super excited by that. It is going to be advertising supported, but having said that, we have been committed for years, even before Peacock, to reducing ad loads and the commercial experience and basically making the environment more enjoyable for our viewers, who are at the heart of everything we do. So we do plan to monetize that through advertising, which is of course where my group working under Linda Yaccarino and Krishan Bhatia come into it and add sales. And it really gives us an opportunity to innovate, and it also gives us an opportunity to really work through the one platform that we announced earlier this year at CES to provide that advertising experience across platforms to our viewers and also for our advertisers and agencies.
And in terms of, you know, you're obviously going in an increasingly SVOD, I won't say dominated, but and you know, SVOD is becoming increasingly popular. How do you optimize things? I'm thinking particularly of ad load when it comes to going up against those different services, which, you know, many consumers do have access to. And I say that as somebody who, for me, I'm fine with ads once I'm sort of engaged with the program. It's the pre-roll that catch me out, where I just sort of that initial the thought of switching over to an ad-funded service. It's that thought of I'm first going to see a few ads, maybe 2 minutes, that deters me. Once I'm involved in the program, I don't even, you know, really notice that I'm sort of passively consuming them. But how do you manage the ad load in, you know, particularly in OTT environments?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is, you know, we're an AVOD service, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to receive 2 minutes of ad load up front. I mean, advertising really has to be put in the totality of the viewing environment. So there's a much reduced ad load to what everyone will be used to in TV. Sure, there's SVOD opportunities out there, quite a few, as you say, but I also think there's subscriber fatigue, right? So I think that people are going to welcome a free AVOD service, and we're looking forward to that. When we look at the ad load, we really try to look at what does the viewing experience look like? What is the habits that we're seeing? Is it someone that logs on once? We have to make sure we understand the frequency of ads they will be seeing. We don't want to inundate them. And we also don't want to be bombarding them with the same ads. So there's very strict frequency control as well.
Yeah, I think the SVOD fatigue is, I've been very keen to it. Obviously, I've a vested interest in understanding the different platforms and all the rest of it, but I think we have reached the limit in our house, and I think we've got a sort of 6 month Disney Plus free trial, and we don't have kids, so it's been targeted for the chop before the 6 month trial comes to an end. I think you know, there has to be a limit to all these things, and there isn't going to be room for everyone. And I think that it will be that hardcore of a few different SVOD services, and then you'll supplement those with the rest will be AVOD. I don't think advertising is going anywhere, thankfully for both of us. So Comcast acquired Sky for $39 billion a few years ago, and I know that you guys have been collaborating with Sky on a few different fronts. I think it's particularly interesting for a lot of us who've been, you know, traversing the UK market and the US market. I'm just curious about what you've learned from them and what they've been learning from you, and then how you're partnering together to sort of build this sort of global business.
We partner very closely with Sky. If anything, I wouldn't even say it's partner. We just work together all the time. Global sales is very important to us. It's important to our clients. You know, when you have big brands or even some of the smaller B2C brands who are trying to create their strategies globally, working together with Sky allows us to facilitate a global strategy, but activate locally. And by that, I mean, we're achieving the same goals, but you have to act differently when you're in these different markets. And having worked in the UK as well as throughout Europe and then Asia, I would say that you really need to understand what the local regulations are, what the local data capabilities are, local data laws. And without taking all of that into consideration, you could really botch a campaign. But having this partnership with Sky and working together with them on everything we do allows us to really help those agencies and advertisers facilitate a global plan. And, you know, we don't have to go over there to learn these capabilities or how to interact with them. we natively have those within our company. So it's been a really wonderful experience working with the Sky team throughout the various countries that they're in.
And do you think programmatic TV will ever become programmatic in the way that it's used online, you know, particularly on the open web? Do you ever think TV is going to get to that place where people just jump onto a DSP and are buying and selling TV ads, or is it always going to be a very different beast?
You know, that's a great question, because, you know, right now TV buying just doesn't behave in the way that we're used to programmatic digital. And the reality is that programmatic means a lot of things to a lot of people. So it's probably not even the correct term, at least in the short term for television. I do think that television buying is going to change. It's going to have to change. But I like to look at it from an automation standpoint as opposed to programmatic, because we can't just wake up tomorrow and say, I'm going to transact TV programmatically. I mean, there's decades and decades of TV systems that have to come along for the ride and have to either be upgraded or swapped out completely to enable that. So we look at how we make buying more efficient for our customers every day. Some of that will come along with the transition to TV becoming more digital or more digital-like, and some of it is just going to take longer.
And what's the regulatory situation? Lindsay Clay from Thinkbox was on the podcast a few weeks ago, and I think that was her number one concern in terms of particularly leveling the playing field with the social platforms, etc. You know, she said, you know, if they had to apply the same rigor, you know, when it comes to regulations. I mean, one of the things that Europeans notice first when they sort of turn on an American TV in their hotel room, if they visit the US, is the, you know, that you see a lot of, the regulatory environment seems to be more relaxed. So you'll see, you know, pharmaceutical ads followed by warnings with, you know, might cause your hair to fall out and for you to die. So do you face the same regulation? What's the regulatory situation in the US in comparison to what you guys face and then what the online guys have to deal with?
Sure. I think that there is a lack of regulation of what we see online with the social channels. And I think some of it is just the point of maturation that they're in. You know, they have to get to the point where they're going through the same regulatory rules and regulations that we deal with, but it is something that we have to deal with every day. Again, going back to the decades and decades of television, I mean, there's been a lot of time for us to consider what is okay, what's not, what are the rules, how do we apply them? And a lot of that is now thrown into question as we have the digital capabilities with CTV. So I think we're going to be in a time of transition for the next couple of years as we figure out what rules do we take from television, what rules do we take from digital, what rules have to be applied to digital. And we're going to have to stay on our toes as we employ these different kinds of digital solutions to really make CTV the experience it could be.
Yeah. What for you is the greatest problem facing the TV advertising industry today? I mean, what's the greatest challenge?
I mean, there's the old systems, which I mentioned earlier, but I think the greatest challenge is also the greatest opportunity, and that lies in data, right? If we can get data right and really understand how to centralize the storage and processing of data, as well as the use of it, and how it relates to the public in general, so that we can provide them a great experience in a very safe manner. I think that TV and CTV could be a great place, but I think it's a huge challenge because the regulations are changing. We're looking at a cookie-less future. A lot of the digital capabilities that we've tried to bring over to TV or replicate in TV or somewhat in question as these capabilities providers have to learn how to operate in a new world. So I have no doubt that it's going to be figured out, but you know, there's going to be some pain in the middle. Like as we look at things like how do we share data safely? How do we reconcile device IDs and just IDs in general? it's going to take some time. But I think that's the greatest challenge, but also by far the greatest opportunity we see as a company.
And do you think that it's going to, you know, this, the changes we're seeing with data, you know, whether it comes from privacy regulations or whether it comes from the demise of the cookie, is it going to level the playing field with the social platforms or, you know, the tech giants? Or what impact, what will be the net effect on the TV industry, advertising industry? Do you think it's going to be a net positive or net negative?
I think it's going to become a net positive. As far as leveling the playing field, I just think it's not even apples to oranges. It's like apples to candy bars or something not even edible. Like, I don't know that you can really look at the two user experiences and compare them. So I don't know that there's an opportunity for leveling the playing field. I think that we use quality premium content, and there's just a difference in perception in the content and the advertising that surrounds that, and that's something that the social platforms will never have.
Yeah, and what is your relationship with the social platforms? Are you distributing content on YouTube, for example, or any of the emerging platforms, Chinese or otherwise?
we put our content on YouTube. I mean, it's regularly consumed there. And we work very closely with these partners to understand the medium and how we need to partner from both the content and an advertising perspective.
And is it distributing full content, or is it mainly, you know, a promotional tool to sort of give bite-sized pieces of your content?
I wouldn't call it a promotional tool, because it's not that we use these for advertising per se. But the full content, I think, is, it's, we do offer short form and we offer long form there. So it's not one or the other.
And on the consumer side, I mean, one of the things we're seeing, I mean, some of the reports that we've seen on the subscriber, we're seeing significant subscriber declines at many of the different pay TV operators, and that's kind of a global trend. I mean, how can pay TV reinvent itself and make it more attractive to the modern consumer?
Well, I think that on the whole, we have to understand that the consumer doesn't differentiate between screens, whether they're interacting with content on their phone in their hand, on their tablet, on their laptop, on the big glass in the wall. I don't think consumers care. And I think that it's important that we understand that, and we also update our capabilities, and this is for everyone in the industry, so that we can provide them with a unified experience across platforms. And, you know, that's really what our one platform initiative is about. It's about being able to provide viewers with quality content and seamless experiences across the glass. And it's also to provide our advertisers and agencies an opportunity to reach consumers across all of those different platforms, regardless of how anyone decides they choose to consume our inventory. In a pandemic like now, it could be perhaps up in linear, or VOD. If once people start going back to work, it might be on their phones as they sit on transportation. So, you know, this has to be very changeable. We have to be able to, you know, shift in an instant and provide those capabilities across the devices. And I think everybody in the industry has to look at it that way.
I mean, that type of language that you're using there, that, you know, the need to be, I suppose, agile. You didn't use the word agile. I know it's a cheesy word, but it does capture how you need to be in the modern media environment, I think. And you were one of the early people who, you know, went over from the ad tech side and into the TV space. It's something that we're seeing more and more in Europe at the moment, actually. It's a lot of the sort of major broadcasters are bringing over people who are more from that sort of programmatic data-driven side. What has your experience been of it? And, you know, I think that there is a view that, you know, the TV industry has been too slow, that, you know, that the the sort of archaic structures in place, I mean, you know, and legacy infrastructure that you have to deal with. Of course, what has your experience been of having to sort of initiate those changes in a company where the culture wasn't necessarily geared up for that? Or perhaps I'm saying that and that wasn't the case. But yeah, what has your experience been?
Sure. I mean, my experience has been incredibly positive over the past 5 and a bit years that I've been at NBC. I mean, when I came in, they had already joined their teams, become one portfolio. They had already introduced a single upfront across the brand. So the way I look at it, NBCU has been an innovator all along. You know, there are things, of course, that come along with legacy that, you know, you would perhaps do differently if you were starting new. And of course, we have to understand what's being done, why it's being done, and then modify it to change into the new paradigm that we're experiencing with this this shift in viewership. So I was blessed walking into an organization that was very innovative in nature. Having said that, you know, I look back at my days in tech, and I always used to try to sell into companies like NBCU, and I say, oh, why don't they do this? Why don't they do this? You know, but the reality is that there's hundreds of millions of viewers, right? And they just can't turn on a dime. Like, you know, everybody says, oh, you can't turn an aircraft carrier quickly. But I would actually turn that back to the vendors that want to work with us and beg them to understand that there are years of legacy, but there are good reasons for it. And they really have to understand and learn how to interface with our industry as much as we have to face the desire to innovate. And you know, it's sort of a meeting in the middle. So becoming a TV or CTV vendor, you can't just wake up that morning and be like, oh, we're going to support the linear environment or the TV environment. There's a lot that goes with that. And it's a very difficult, it's a difficult space to enter, if you ask me. And I don't think it's for the faint of heart. And I think the vendors really have to learn what goes into television advertising. It's a lot more regulation and process than they think. So we need them to understand that as much as we have to look at what they're doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's very much my experience. And I think it eventually becomes every ad tech vendor's experience at some point in their connected TV journey, where they sort of realize that, oh, this is you know, pretty different from monetizing mobile in-app inventory or whatever else. It's a very different world with different ways of thinking. And even from display to video, there's a huge that was where I came from when I first started the site. Was my understanding was of the display world and where there's more of a performance mindset, where there's a different approach to inventory, there's different goals for campaigns. And I didn't anticipate in the slightest how incredibly different the video and particularly the TV world is. And like I say, it's different for very well established, good, logical, commercial reasons, not because they're idiots.
But there's a lot more at risk too, from what's at risk from a deal size perspective.
Yeah, exactly. So if I was to give you a magic wand and you were able to solve any problem facing the TV industry today, actually, we'll widen that to the entire advertising industry. What would you solve and why?
Sure. You know, not to keep going back to the same thing, but data and ID. I think that this is a very difficult challenge that we have, but I also think it's very important. It's important that we manage data the right way in a privacy compliant and respectful to the viewer method. But at the same time, right now, there are so many different kinds of data, so many vendors, and there's no clear path that leads to where you should go. Like there's no one playbook that we should follow for data. What's right for one organization might not be right for the other. So I think if I had a magic wand, I would reconcile all the data, I would match the IDs, and make it much easier for us to you know, plow the path to CTV.
Do you think we need to sort of re-architect the entire ecosystem for that, or can those things be harmonized within the existing infrastructure?
God, I hope not. although I guess it's job security for all of us, right? But I think there are going to have to be parts of it that are re-architected. I think that the structure is going to have to change. The capabilities are going to have to change. But it can be done. I don't think it's an impossibility. I think it's a matter of some of the key players banding together, establishing norms, and deciding how we're going to operate.
Yeah, I think there's been a huge learning process through all of this. I think sometimes people comment as if it was cynically, you know, people as if every ad tech vendor was being extremely cynical in, you know, just joining the programmatic party and trying to offer, you know, a commoditized service. But I really don't think that was the thinking, certainly in the early days of ad tech, and, you know, even the companies who've joined since. I think there's a very sincere belief that, you know, they were adding value and that this was the way everything was going to work out. And I think a lot of the problems were genuinely unforeseen, and, you know, we're not things that people have relished over the years. and this constant bolting on of, you know, sticking plaster solutions, and the growing Lumascape over the years was never a plan. It's just the way things evolved. And I'm interested to see the way everything evolves over the next few years. I think there's still some interesting challenges, and when those challenges go away, I'm in trouble.
I think it's going to come down to more cooperation. I mean, we're really cooperating with a lot of parties across the industry, and things like, we work with OpenAP to try and simplify the buying and the audience buying across publishers, because audience buying is hard work, right? And data is hard work. And that's meant to really make it much easier for the advertisers and agencies. We work with OR, Open Addressable Ready, so we can try and create standards for addressable linear as it comes into play. We're also testing with Nielsen. We work with BlockGraph. You know, I think that there's a lot of different capabilities where we're seeing a lot of cooperation, a lot of joining forces among major industry players so that we can get to the next stage. And I think this is going to become more and more important as we go forward.
Yeah, it's I think the challenge with those things is always that there are competitive rivalries. But I think there's something about the TV industry. I think partly the fact that it's more concentrated. I actually think the fact that people tend to be, and there's no reflection on you, Denise, but people tend to be a bit older and they've often known each other for longer periods of time. And even that personal dimension has sort of helped people sort of work together a bit more collaboratively. A lot of the digital publishers have struggled in that regard. And I think some are succeeding. I think everyone's realizing that it's a make or break time in term. And I'm not suggesting that's the case for you, but there's a stronger imperative to cooperate with your former rivals. So if I was to give you 10 million to invest in the media and advertising industry today, where would you invest and why?
Pounds or dollars?
well, make it pounds. I've got dollars written down. I was trying to be culturally sensitive, but we'll make it pounds. It's an upgrade for now. We've got Brexit deal coming up. You might be wishing you had your dollars back in a few months, but
that's a great question. That doesn't get you that much anymore, especially when you're dealing with data and the volume that we deal with. But I think that I would invest it in companies that are looking at data sharing in a privacy compliant way, something along the lines of BlockGraph, simply because we are cooperating more, right? But there is a need to keep our data safe and secure and manage the privacy of our viewers. So how do we allow to create for more tailored, personalized experiences without exposing data that they would prefer that we keep safe? So I think that there's a lot of work to be done in this area. I think that it's something that's going to be important from reporting. It's going to be important from attribution, targeting, viewer experience. And I don't think it can be invested in enough at the current time.
Yeah. Do you think there's potential for problems with having these emerging solutions? You know, are they being built in such a way that they're interoperable, or is there a problem that we're sort of getting to a point where we're going to end up going down a similar path instead of having lots of different identity and data sharing solutions? Well, what's your
I think that's a great question. If you look at our you know, past over the past couple of years with the different LumaScape or any kind of industry diagram, we've had quite a few startups, and God knows I've been a part of quite a few, that have tried their hand at building solutions, but were built more for sale than they were for integration. So I think that now, because we see companies coming together to try to develop solutions, they'll hopefully build more towards an integration path, because that's going to be terribly important. Because what I've seen over, you know, the past, I won't comment on how many years I've been in the industry, but I think the dinosaurs were roaming the earth. You know, what I've seen in the past is that there's been a lot of acquisitions, and then they acquire technology only to let it get stagnant or have to rebuild in order to integrate. And I really don't think that we have the time to do that if we want to bring our capabilities into, you know, the next era.
Well, Denise, we're all out of time, and I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much. It's always such a pleasure talking to you.
Cheers. Likewise. Take care. And yeah, I know you have a tropical storm about to hit your house. So I hope all goes well with that too.